Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC. I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you.
I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. It's the final Word Daily of this indie series, and we've saved the best till last. Partly because we've got this stunning backdrop behind us, if you are watching on YouTube, but mostly because I'm joined once again by Vidushin Ahantharaja, who's going to sum up for me, out of 10, how would you rate this England tour? From England's perspective.
Ooh, from England's perspective, 3 out of 10.
Three?
Three.
That's low.
Three, or, well, I was going to go four, and I thought maybe four.
Okay.
Okay, you know what, let me do that again. I'm going to say 4.3 out of 10.
Okay, because I think, I was talking to this about Daniel yesterday. I think the final defeat has, basically England have bookended the tour in a way which has just completely shifted people's A, expectations to begin with, and B, their memories of the trip. So 4-1 before you came out, you predicted 4-1.
Yeah.
So that was probably par for the course. Then England win the first test match, and 4-1 all of a sudden becomes the worst case scenario. And it's like, oh my God, we're going to win the series. Then, they lose so like dramatically in the fifth and final test. It's made me think, at least, that almost all those moments of 50-50 moments during the series, rather than being a case of, oh, those were the moments the series could have gone either way, those are actually the moments where England were at their best and were clinging on to India, and India just had other levels to go on to.
Yeah. If you think of test series like a, you know, I suppose like a long distance race, it's about who has the most kicks.
Okay,
and India comfortably had the most kicks. And it was only when England got close enough to them that they, well, I suppose, that India kicked. And it culminated, to me, in this final test.
Okay.
When they just got to a point where they were like, what if we just sprint all the way around? Because at no point, you know, England were, at no point were they in the, oh, well, actually, no, they were in this for a bit, because Ben Stokes won the toss.
Yes, they did.
I'll tell you why I went 3 and then 4.3.
Please do.
I think it's because, you're right, I did predict 4-1. I also thought their best chance would be winning the first test. And I think what it is when you think to the moments that England let India get away from them, some of that was India being brilliant. Some of that was also England being just not as good as they should have been in those moments. There were relinquished moments as well. Certainly with the bat, both in Ranchi and Rajkot, to go backwards. And I think that's why I end up on 4.3, because I don't think there's any shame whatsoever in losing to India at home, even if it's an India without superstars, because I'm sure we'll talk about this later. The players who came in were just quality. And I think it summed it up in the way that they all had something to say on that last day of the game, because they're all exceptionally confident in who they are and where they are. So I think if I'm putting a negative spin on this, I think it's purely because England just made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, so on that front, and I know people hate to use the phrase Bazball, et cetera, but things need a name, so we're going to call it Bazball. Has Bazball failed, or is it so difficult to win in India that England didn't have to win for the tour to be not successful, for Bazball to be proven to be wrong, for instance?
I think bigger picture, it failed. I think if you go into, if we go into the micros of it rather than the macro, you end up looking at the spinners who kind of came out of nowhere, came into an environment where they were encouraged to do well, but also not just allowed to be juvenile. They emerged and they stood quite tall. And I think Tom Hartley, within that first test, was a great indicator of that. And also, you know, Shoaib Bashir going forward. And I would say also it was succeeded in part because I don't think Ollie Pope plays that innings if he isn't encouraged to be...
Yeah, I think that's a very good point.
...to be that kind of batter. Now, obviously, he fell off a cliff after that, but that innings doesn't happen without that degree of freedom. I don't think Ben Duckett scores at 150 in a different England team. I'm not necessarily saying it's a Baz Ball innings. It's more that, you know, he's come in, felt very comfortable, felt very at ease. He's looked, I mean, $1 million since he's come in. And then, you know, Crawley's form is the product of, you know, what McCullum and Stokes have tried to instill in everyone, really. And he probably got the most rope out of anyone and is paying it back. So I think, you know, there are moments where, or rather with individuals, it's worked quite well. I think broadly it hasn't, though, has it? Which is why they have lost 4-1 in the way that they've lost 4-1, because they lost the last test and they got battered, and they relinquished moments in this game that coming into this series, they certainly privately and a bit publicly said they wouldn't do.
I keep on going back to Raunchy, and I know there are sliding moments and what-ifs attached to every sporting event ever in history, but 170 ahead, India with 7 down, you're home. Without putting your key in the door, you're basically home. If you run that test match through a number of autoplay things, you win every single time. But to then contradict myself, I actually was going back through it and I realised it was that middle day, I think it was the second or third day in Raj Court, exactly halfway through the series, where England had gone toe-to-toe, and then in the Duckett innings, where England got 300 out of 150, he got 150 out of England's 300, they collapsed. And from that point onwards, they only just got above 100 in Raj Court. They then got rolled in Raunchy. They then made 200 basically twice in... where are we? Where are we in the most beautiful place in the world?
We are
Dharamshala.
In Dharamshala, yeah.
Mountains.
I had to think that. Yeah,
I don't know what just happened to me.
We're in the Himalayas.
But it was from that point onwards that basically England broke and they never quite recovered. And because the series was still live and because England had their moments, I'm basically tossing and turning between two kind of truths which can't really live with each other. One is that England were moments and so close to making history out here and could have potentially come here as and a decider and you don't know what happens. And the other one is I go, actually, it's a really boring conclusion, but India are better than England and that's why they won 4-1 and that's why they actually won by 400 runs in Raj Court by an innings in the fifth test. But I think the fallout from it is, because it's happened in the order and the way that it has, we've just spoken to Brendan McCullum. For the first time, it's like, it's not a case of, oh, this 11 or this 12, this is the ones forever, we're backing them, they're amazing. It's, we're going to be making adjustments. Yes, there's pressure on Jack Leach as a spinner. Wicketkeeper, don't ask me that. Like, we don't know the answers to that yet. We're going to bring in new seamers. He's basically guaranteed Gus Atkinson a debut in the summer, which
I found pretty much quite
surprising. Have you heard McCullum speak like that after any series since the time you've been, well, in the last 2 years?
Well, no, because he's never had to, really.
Yeah, sure.
This is the first series they've lost.
But I mean that in terms of like the tone. Obviously, you can be reactionary, but even when they've lost on occasion, the Wellington loss last year, the Wellington loss was almost celebrated as proving what England were trying to achieve by being this exciting
team. It wasn't almost celebrated.
So this is my question is, like, have we finally reached the point where it's not fun anymore? It's not fun anymore. We've lost
not even a little
12.
Bit.
It's not fun anymore. We're going to have to change. We're going to have to make adjustments, to quote.
Well, yeah, because if you think about what they set out to do originally, it was to lift a group of players who had just been rubbish, really, like absolute trash.
One win in 17.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen people come out and say, like, oh, you know, you can't really count COVID. It's like, well, if we can a little bit. And also, if you look at the previous passage that... in terms of the period which corresponds to this one, in terms of like 2 years, you know, there's a lot of talk of England's win ratio being very similar in that specific era, but they didn't play India at home in that
right.
passage either.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a redundant statement anyway. But ultimately, what they've done is they've taken a group of players and tried to kind of raise their ceiling, but also essentially lift the floor.
Yep.
And they've done that, really. That's now done, because Zach Crawley and Ben Duckett are, you know, have shown exceptional consistency.
Good, even though I know Duckett's only got one score of 50 more.
Sure, yeah, yeah. But they've shown exceptional consistency over the last, like, 9 months, say. Pope is a bit of a worry, understandably, and it'll be interesting to see what happens to him come the summer, because I wouldn't be all that surprised if one of their wicket-keeping solutions immediately is, like, why don't we just give Pope the gloves and move
really?
Him down? Maybe. Like,
wow, okay.
We're all spitballing here, you know.
Yeah.
This will be out of date by then anyway. But, you know, stuff like that. And then now they're in a situation where actually what you're left with once you've done that is not quite excuses, but I suppose a reason to I suppose a reason to let you not even let your foot off the gas, but there's a casual nature to this all, which belies the work they do behind the scenes, but manifests itself in press conferences when they're sure. You know, a bit, oh, you know, what are you going to do? Who knows what this team, you know, we know what this team can do, blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was particularly instructive today with McCullum when he was like, look, we've got to be smart about the messaging because it makes us seem like clowns, essentially.
Yeah, but I found that interesting because basically this England team has been so much fun to watch, and I think it would have been so much fun to be a part of. And because they were doing so well and they were succeeding, you were able to do whatever. And they won the first test, so you're kind of getting high off your own supply. You're like, we can actually do anything. We haven't lost anything. We haven't lost a series in however many series we've had. Yeah, fuck it. It's fun, isn't it? Oh, we'll chase whatever. I know Ben Duckett says all these things taking the piss. He really, really does. But you don't see the smirk on someone's face when you read the quote on in a different continent.
No, basically. Sure. And you got
which is what McCollum's saying. Like, we need to be a bit smart about that. Like, we can say that behind closed doors.
And also, like, he's not, you know, I know in a press conference they're talking to us, the press, but we're not kind of keeping it to ourselves and being like, what do you say? Like, the reason that engagement interaction exists is for fans, and for literally everyone else.
Very good point.
So
yeah.
Those are the people you need to worry about. You don't necessarily need to, you know, kind of pander to us in that way.
The end point of this, though, is we get to the summer. And so for those who aren't aware, the kind of like, McCollum's on a 4-year deal. And it basically, as all these things do, it kind of operates on Ashes cycles. So he's got two. He's had the home Ashes and he has the away Ashes. He had 23 test matches up until this point. These maths might be a little bit off. And the kind of finale of those 23 matches was Ashes at home, India away. We're now at the halfway point and it's 23 test matches until the end of the away Ashes. So you England go West Indies at home, Sri Lanka at home, Pakistan away, New Zealand away, India at home, Australia away.
Zimbabwe one off as well.
So, which could be, as we've learned today, if Jimmy Anderson plays every single test, that'll be his 200th, and it'll be the same as he made his debut against Zimbabwe. So exciting. We'll talk about Anderson in a second. And whether this is a point where England kind of go away from there, we're going to pick the best team for every single match and maybe do some future proofing. And basically, for the first time in a couple of years, there could be a change to the core of the team. There's a valid comment to be made that has, or question to be asked, has Bairstow played his last test for England? Has Folks played his last test for England? God forbid, has Jimmy Anderson played his last test? I don't know why I keep on saying God forbid. It's going to happen at some point. It's not religious. But England there's going to be significant changes this summer, in effect.
Yeah, there's going to be a bit of a shift. And there kind of needs to be. And it's not just being reactionary after a defeat. It's just the natural, it's the reality of the life cycle of players. It's how much they've seen from players as well. You know, McCollum said a few times that there were two areas. There are a couple of, he said there were a couple of areas that he wanted to look at. And that's not necessarily two. You know, some people, you know, let's say he was, you know, speaking casually, that might be more than two.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
I think he was talking about the wicketkeeper. I think he was talking about the spinner. And I think he was talking about the pace bowler. So just to tee you up briefly. So it's going to be Folks, Bairstow debate happens again, or is it another character? You've introduced Ollie Pope there, Ollie Robinson or Jamie Smith, other options, or James Rue.
You have to say those three together now, don't you?
They actually are a package. They all play together.
Yeah, they come in threes.
McCollum, who's the head coach of England, I know that, admitted that. Not admitted, he conceded that Hartley and Bashir were in a position to challenge Leach for the number one spinner.
Which is actually, quietly, really, really important that he said that.
Yes.
Because something he went on to address was, and we put it to him, that like, you know, it's no secret to anyone covering county cricket who speaks to county cricketers that they do believe it's a bit of a close shot.
Sure.
And naturally, fans, when things go badly, think, well, you know, they're not going to drop him, or, you know, Bairstow comes back and he's like, oh, because he's their best mate. When, you know, these people just make these assumptions because they're all quite happy and there's been very little flux with the squad. But him saying Jack Leach, who for the longest time has been like
the guy
hailed as the totem of this team, about like, you know, his bravery, how funny he is behind the scenes, how much energy he gives to the group. But he was almost...
Was it never his bowling?
It was his bowling a bit.
I know. It was low-hanging fruit.
But there's... He was their number one spinner, and also he was their number one mascot. And so now it comes into a situation where McCollum's like, well, no, like, you know, Tom Hartley has shown enough with bat and ball to potentially challenge him, especially in English conditions, where he might not bowl as much. Joe Bashir, his... I mean, he does look proper, doesn't he? In terms of the way they talk about him, I think, and this is, having said that they are quite, you know, they're quite bullshit about everyone, but something about him looks proper, and the fact that he's, you know, managed what he's had to do this series is very impressive. But, you know, that is important to say that someone like Jack Leach is vulnerable.
Is it because Bashir's funny as well? He's meant to be like the most popular person in the group, and they're not going to say this lad we brought on to, he's shit. They're going to be like, they're going to obviously.
That is quite an interesting point, because if you are watching this and you are a cricketer on the cusp of the England team,
which I'm sure many of you
and
are,
and you're one of those who like so dedicated to the game, and you know you almost have that, you know, Kobe Bryant thing of, you know, you wake up at 4 a.m. so you can train twice before your competitors wake up.
Beat your alarm.
Yeah, I would say like. Get funny, magic. We don't have a magician in the team.
We should have one.
Close-up magic, that kind of stuff. People love magic.
I genuinely thought you were about to say something at a sincere point there.
No. But you kind of alerted me to this. You need be funny. Just be entertaining.
Don't have a podcast,
though.
No.
We're fucked. We're never playing for England.
Jimmy Anderson took 700 wickets. Can you? Why don't I care? Why don't I feel anything?
I've got an answer for this. Because it was quite unemotional. Even though in the moment it was,
celebrate. There was a big celebration.
And rightfully so. You know, third person to reach that mark ever. I think ultimately it comes from that many people, not least the man himself, thought it would happen sooner than this.
Yes.
If you look at the breakdown of, you know, 0 to 100, 100 to 200, this 600 to 700 has taken, I think, 57 innings. It's a longer stretch he's had to, or longest number of innings taken for one of those centuries. The second longest is the first.
Nice. Okay.
Well, which in its own way was, you know, his action was changed. He was in, he was out for a bit, and then he came back in. So there was a lot of flux there. We are in a period at the moment where he's working things out. You know, coming into this tour, he talked about how he noticed that he'd lost a bit of snap in his shoulder, so he had to run in quicker. So he's making these adjustments here and there. And I think, ultimately, it comes from the fact that he wanted it sooner. It comes off the back of a disappointing summer and the fact that he got there with with his last wicket of the series and broadly has decent figures at the end of the four tests he played. But I think that's why it feels a bit cold, because it's an incredible bit of history, but...
We've crawled there.
Yeah. And we've never crawled with Anderson.
Do you remember like the hype and the excitement of how many words got written about when the press pack discovered the statistic that Anderson and Broad were about to take their 1,000th wicket together at Mount Maunganui last year? And then also...
Oh, I remember that,
because like 1,001 was like Warne and McGrath, and so we got like 3 days of going. But what was exciting about that, it was like a Stuart Broad. It was one of those spells by Stuart Broad. And so it all had this massive crescendo. Whereas you'll have, I imagine like the BBC and all these outlets will have had their Anderson 700 wickets piece prepped from May. And it's just eventually getting there. And the difficult thing is with Anderson, it's like, I think he's 15 tests across his last 8 matches. Like, good luck being the one dropping him or telling him, actually, we've had enough. And I'm sure he'll go well in the summer if he chooses to play. And it's just kind of a case of like, when do you tell Grandad he's moving out, basically? Like, he's putting him out to pasture.
We're putting him in a home.
It sounds that way. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how England handle this, because he is a legend for a reason, because he's England's greatest ever seam bowler, bar none. I think that's probably a very uncontroversial statement to say. But do England want to get into the position, and McCullum was asked this, of picking someone, picking people this summer who they know will not be playing the following year, basically? And McCollum's like, well, don't write him off. You're like, only idiots have written him off, and they've written him off for the last decade. I do sometimes find it quite funny where it's like, he's the fittest he's ever been at 41. I'm like, why did you have to be the fittest you ever have been, Jimmy? Is there a reason for that? Did you have to address something? I don't know why I've been so negative about that. I've been negative about it. He's just achieved something that no seamer has ever done in the game. If you're hoping something about India this episode, unlucky. You guys won. It was too strong. You were too good. What are you going to do? You've got amazing young players. You'll be fine. You'll get Virat and KL Rahul back in. Then you get Mohammad Shami, and then you get Rishabh Pant. Honestly, there's not a team in the world I worry less about. Do you have anything to add to that?
if you were playing for India twos, you'd tell people about it in a bar, wouldn't you?
I tell a lot of people I play twos cricket.
That's what I mean. But you know, that's embarrassing.
That's not
a controversial thing to say. That is really embarrassing.
Are you talking about me now?
Yeah. But if you're like, oh, what are you doing? I'm carrying drinks for India. I was like, fuck, you must be good.
Really good.
Even Padikkal, like, coming in.
He's never going to play another test.
What? Why?
Because there's too many of them.
But he looks so dreamy. No, coming in.
Could he play another test? Yes. Yeah. Will he? Virat will just be like, oh, about four, actually, mate.
Thanks. Sorry, yeah. I think it's your headphones.
I just lost my headphones. Anyway, India fans, fear not, you'll be fine. England fans, get excited. There's actually going to be like some change. There's going to be a bit of some moving parts. I've been Cameron. This has been Vish. If you're watching on YouTube, those have been the mountains. That's it from India. I'm so sorry. I'm so sad. But the final word, as ever, can't stop, won't stop. It's all brought to you by Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City, unless you're watching from the Southern Hemisphere, in which case it's Seabus Super. And Adam and Jeff will be back with you tomorrow for the final daily from Christchurch, where a very exciting test match is underway. Then there'll be story times weekly episodes. But until then, in my future questions, my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go about it.